Welcome to What in God's Name? He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shayna Appel. We're doing current events and culture from a theological and philosophical point of view. You are along for 22 and a half minutes of curiosity, depth, and shining light. Unless we're having a bad day, Shayna, in which case you're in for 22 and a half minutes of...
of blither.
Incuriousness, shallowness, and darkness.
And shadow. Absolutely.
Speaking of music, when do we have the pleasure of hearing you play the guitar and sing on What in God's Name?
Oh, God. Probably never.
Oh, Shayna.
Oh, my God. No, they want me to...
People, she has... amazing music chops.
No.
Okay.
I have to record something for a church service that's coming up in a couple of weeks. So
we're going to have to apply some pressure on Shayna to play us some music. Sorry, I surprised you with that.
Are you channeling my mother? Is that what's going on here? So last week, Chris began the show by explaining to our listeners that sometimes Chris has an itch and we scratch it. Sometimes I have an itch and we scratch it. Today's show, I think, is really somewhat the result of my itch, which had to do with looking at the state of divide in our nation today, particularly as it pertains to those around the coronavirus pandemic, those who are incredibly fearful of losing lives, and those who are incredibly fearful of losing their livelihoods. So now we have this divide in our nation that at its deepest point, we have seen, you know, individuals on state house lawns across the country and before their houses of representation, before their town halls, armed to the teeth in opposition to the lockdown orders. So, Chris, I was thinking about that, and in an effort to do that, I sort of went back into my old marriage and family counseling head and started to think about, you know, the essence of conflict and its roots and so on and so forth. And I got on the internet and started searching around for some information and happened upon this wonderful podcast by a gentleman by the name of Jim Farrell, who presented a TED Talk at Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts, my alma mater. Thank you very much. And his 19-minute talk is entitled Resolving the Heart of Conflict. So I want to tell a story that Jim told, Chris, because I want to set this up and I want to help our listeners get beyond the binary.
Tell us a story, Shayna.
So here's the story that Jim Farrell shared. Apparently some guy came through one of his programs offered by his institute, and the gentleman had a son, 16-year-old son, with whom he was highly displeased. He felt his son was irresponsible, didn't like the friends his son was hanging out with. And one Friday night, the kid comes to him and says, "Dad, I want to borrow the car." And dad didn't want to loan him the car because, you know, he's irresponsible and he hangs out with the wrong kind of people. But dad didn't want to seem mean-spirited either, so he decided what he would do is attach a ridiculously early check-in time on the loan of the car. So he said, "Oh, I'll give you the car, but you have to be home by 10:30. So kid said, "Great," grabbed the keys, ran out the door. The rest of the evening, dad sat and stewed, ruminating on how irresponsible his son was. And as it got closer to 10:30, the father was like furious. And he said, "That's it. I'm drawing a line in the sand. He's never borrowing the car again." And just at about that time, he hears the squeal of tires coming into the driveway. And the kid bursts through the door, arms raised in victory, big smile on his face. And he says, "I made it, Dad." And dad looks at his watch. And it's 9:29.
Do you mean 10:29?
10:29. Yes, 10:29. Now, we would think dad would be happy about this. No. I mean, he should have been happy, right? If we had been sitting with him that evening and had asked him, you know, "What is it that you want?" He would have said, you know, "A responsible kid, a kid who follows up on his word, a kid who can be counted on to do what he says he's going to do." And well, that is what he got, right? I mean, the kid said he'd be home by 10:30 and there he was. So there are probably any number of ways that dad could have gone about grilling the kid. You know, you probably had to speed to get here on time. Did you fill the car up with gas? You know, what's with squealing into the driveway? Responsible kids don't drive like that. But dad chose to say instead to the kid, well, you pushed that right to the limit, didn't you? And what could have been a really beautiful healing moment went quite literally to hell in a handbasket. Now, Farrell is asking us to unpack the sort of why that happens. How do we unpack that in a way that we could look at it and understand it so that we don't just fall into the trap? And to help us understand that, he brings up Martin Buber's book, I Thou. So Martin Buber, as our listeners will recall, wrote this book, I Thou, in which he lifts up two very distinct ways of experiencing people. One as people, I Thou, and the other as objects, I It. And when you see people as people, when you experience them fully, when you uphold their personhood and affirm their inherent worth and dignity, you recognize that they are people with hopes and dreams and fears, and those things are important to you. When we see people as objects, they may have hopes and fears and dreams, and who really cares, whatever else. We're not interested, and they are more likely to be used as vehicles for us to accomplish some good or ignored altogether, maybe just, you know, made part of the scenery. What Farrell's thesis is, basically, when we objectify people, we inadvertently purchase the need to be justified. Let me say that again. When we objectify people, we inadvertently purchase the need to be justified.
We're invested in our view of that person.
Yes, we're invested in our view, and we have to justify that view. And this all happens unconsciously, inadvertently, below the radar screen. So taking that as a jumping off point, I hope your listeners have sort of followed along to this point and are ready to take this next leap, because I'm going to go around a corner here and look at, you know, these armed protesters that are showing up on state house lawns and houses of government across the nation. Because personally, I think they're morons. I think they're total idiots. They're irresponsible. And that is honestly how I am just sort of inclined to think about them off the cuff. And what Farrell's argument causes me to do is to kind of step back from that and say, well, that's very good, Shana. You can think about them objectively like that, and they will stay in their box, right? Because what I need for justification is for them to be the morons I've made them out to be. So I'll hold them in their box and be right about that. But what happens if I have to step back and look at their humanity, look at what's really on the plate? And I'm not talking about the coronavirus deniers, because they're a whole other wing and I'm not ready to go there. That's a graduate course in this little program today. But, you know, for the people who are seriously freaked out, seriously terrified, you know, perhaps they're the primary breadwinners for their households. They're seeing an economy crash before their eyes. They're terrified. They don't see a way out of this. And what's more, the fact that they've chosen to show up with guns tells me they don't think they're going to be listened to without them. So now I'm starting to get into their humanity just a little bit more.
One thing that's striking as I listen to you speak, Shana, is your ability to hold both. Because I know you well enough to know that you do have judgments about certain kinds of people, as we all do.
Yeah, that's my cross to bear, Chris.
And in the moment, I've seen you operate, and in the moment, you call forth an ability to relate to the other with humanity. And I will just share this.
Well, if they're standing right in front of me, that, you know, that's easier to do.
It is easier to do, isn't it?
Yeah, because when I'm sitting at home at night watching the news in my living room, it's just me and Arlo.
But you're kind of deflecting my praise, I think.
Oh. Here, I'll shut up now and just bask.
Please bask. At the Trump rally Shana and I went to last August, Shana just beautifully struck up conversations with folks who, you know, with whom she vehemently disagrees. And I watched Shana make these connections. So the point isn't that you don't have, or that we don't have, judgments about other people, but rather that we can hold the judgment and also connect at the human level.
Yeah, I think it's probably important to honor the fact, the reality, the truth that we have judgments. And it is probably best if we do not allow judgments to have us. And I think, honestly, Chris, you know, the more I've been thinking about this over the last couple of days, I've become aware of how oriented our culture is to manipulate us, to encourage us, to steer us in the direction of objectifying others. And we've been doing that pretty powerfully now for the last 50 years, it's had its own spin. It's had its own, you know, particularity. And I think that 50-year trajectory has gotten us to right where we are right now in this moment, which is so deeply freaking divided that most of us stand at the edge of an ever-widening abyss and wonder, will it ever be able to be bridged? Will we ever be able to bridge this divide? You know, I've felt hopeless at the edge. I've talked to other people who have felt hopeless too. And just like there's no way forward.
You began by mentioning putting on your marriage and family therapy mindset. Yeah. And one of the basic questions that a marriage and family therapist will ask at the beginning is, are you committed to this relationship? Are you willing to put in the work to stay connected?
That is one of the very first questions indeed.
And so that really is a question for us as a divided society. Do we want this relationship to work? So as I was reflecting on this question that Shana and I were going to consider, really it's along the lines of this marriage and family therapy question and this marriage and family therapy approach. You know, regular What in God's Name listeners will know that from time to time we like to use writing from the Atlantic as a jumping off point. And there was an article in the December 2019 issue, author Andrew Ferguson, entitled, Can This Marriage Be Saved? / Applying the Techniques of Couple Counseling to Bringing Reds and Blues Back Together Again. And before we get into the meat of that article, Shana, there's already a problem in the title, which is that, you know, the whole premise
we are, getting beyond the binary
of What in God's Name, our podcast and our project is pushing back against this uncritically accepted notion that political categories are foundational. So right in the title of this article has Reds v. Blue.
Yeah, but I'll let you off the hook, Chris, because you didn't title
it. I didn't title it. You know, our show axiom is that politics is downstream of culture, and politics is derivative, not to say that politics is not important, but that it's just not foundational. So
we'll accept that as a premise.
All that being said,
yes,
there's still some interesting stuff in this article. So let me summarize it. Andrew Ferguson's reporting focuses on an organization called Better Angels. And Shana, I know you've heard of Better Angels because they've been on National Public Radio.
Yeah.
Better Angels exist to promote civil discourse, and their workshops are based on family therapy, which we've been talking about. One of their founders is Bill Doherty, a therapist and professor at the University of Minnesota.
Minnesota, where all the nice people are. Yeah.
They have a 50-50 rule. At all levels, from local to national, Better Angels requires an equal number of, sorry, I don't like this, but reds and blues. So basically, Better Angels runs workshops, and half of the participants are blue, identify as blue, and half of them identify as red.
Now, so is that strictly Democratic and Republican? Those distinctions, red and blue, refer to Democratic and Republican?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it was my understanding that that is the core around which their work revolves.
Yes.
Specifically.
Yes. Okay. Yes. That's their whole thing, is to promote being in conversation with those with whom you disagree. And to be in conversation with those with whom you disagree is to be able to see their humanity, to not objectify, to use the Buber framework of I, thou. So being in conversation with those with whom you disagree is the work, not all of the work, but certainly a very important part of the work of being married. The analogy works.
Yeah, the analogy definitely works. And I think particularly in politics and particularly with the charge that lies just beneath all of the political discourse, or a great deal of the political discourse that we experience these days, is like everybody's fighting to hold on to their piece of ground, you know, as if hearing an idea that I patently disagree with. I mean, I've heard it, I understand it, and I still disagree with it. It's almost as if we're afraid to enter into the conversation because we're like, we don't want our minds changed, or you know, the premise of every conversation is to sway somebody to, you know, our side of things. And when you take that out of the equation and say, that's no longer the purpose. The purpose here isn't to win. There are no winners and losers here, okay? The purpose is just to come away from the table and understand each other. And I think about all those, you know, icebreaker exercises where it's like, all right, you know, sit next to somebody you don't know. Each person introduce yourself to the other for a minute. And then we come back to the group. You're going to introduce your partner, right? So you just have to have listened well enough to pick up some, you know, few facts. And if you're an uber good listener, then maybe you picked up something sort of beyond words and got to some language of the heart. But even if you didn't get that far, you've listened enough to, this isn't about the person is right or wrong. They're just telling you who they are. What would happen if we looked at political discourse that way? Now, I understand on the other side of this, this is hard because there are some serious ramifications. You know, when you're sitting down and talking to somebody who's like, who, for example, is a climate denier or a science denier, the wings of the plane are on fire. I don't have time to have the argument with you of whether or not this is a life-threatening situation. I'm just telling you, I'm going to get off the plane now. You know, and if you want to sit here, of course, we can't get off this plane. We can't get off the earth. So there are some real ramifications, but you have to start. It has to start somewhere.
Well, Shana, that in fact is the critique of these civil discourse movements and the critique of Better Angels. There are things pressing so hard at us that really righteous anger is what's called for. And so I believe this, like, who can be against civil discourse? It's necessary, but I do agree that it's not sufficient.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you say righteous anger is what's called for. I mean, I am all for a good bout of righteous anger. God knows I cultivate it. I brew some good stuff at my house, and if anybody ever wants a cup of it, come on by. The question is, what do you do with your righteous anger? And obviously, we're not going to spend all of our time stopping to bring people along who absolutely are just not interested, or that's akin to, as the scripture says, don't throw your pearls down before swine, right? It's never try to teach a pig to sing, as mama used to say, because it'll annoy the pig and make you look like an idiot. But while we're doing the work, in other words, I think there's room for both. I think there are those people who are called to do the work, and then there are those who are called to be the peacemakers, to maybe help diffuse some of that energy that right now is currently happening, you know, across the divide.
I think one thing that keeps us objectifying others, not keeps us from, but keeps us doing it, is our culture's default position of operating from the secular immanent frame. We don't see other people as children of God, to take it to a spiritual transcendent frame. So all that a lot of us have from the secular immanent frame is to identify, like deeply identify, as red or as blue. And that, it's not a big enough tent. It's takeaway time.
This is hard work, man.
It is hard work. It's discipline.
It's discipline. Oh, I like that, Chris. It's discipline.
To bring it back to theological, well, discipline is not necessarily theological, but when I use it, it is.
Resisting the flow.
Yes.
You know,
that ability
to not just go with, you know, to have emotion, not let emotion have us, to have judgment, not allow judgment to have us. That requires discipline. But first it requires awareness, right? Which is why we beg all of our listeners to stay curious.
Go deep.
And shine light.
This show is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. We thank you so much for your support. And also by our fiscal sponsor, Filmmakers Collaborative. Shana and I have some developing theological take on Trumpism, which we might cover next week. I offer that as a little teaser.
Ooh, that's a teaser.
Meanwhile, you can check us out on our Facebook page at What in Gods, and also on our website, which is whatingods.com. That is
WHATINGODS.
Great to see you, Shayna.
Good to see you, Chris. See you next week.